My name is Juliette Kumar, and I'm the lead for culture and education at the Innovation Agency, which is the HSN for the Northwest Coast of England. I'm a coach, facilitator, and improver, but I started my career over 30 years ago in the NHS as a nurse. And today I really wanted to talk to you about leadership, and in particular, leading through times of stress and crisis, really. And we find ourselves in these conditions right now with COVID-19. So it's important to really reflect on ourselves as leaders, what our behaviours are like in crisis, and what the impact of that might be on our teams and on the people that we look after. So we've been really thrust into this situation, into this uncertain world that we find ourselves in. And it does cause a lot of anxiety. COVID is very personal. It touches every aspect of our lives, whether that's at home or whether that's in our place of work. It's not something that we can just shut the door on and leave. Our families are impacted, our children are impacted, our relatives are impacted, and our workmates are impacted. So it's really important to start to pause, really, and reflect and think, actually, are we leading the way that we need to at this time? And a lot of the research that shows now that leadership through crisis is really about reflecting on our behaviours while we're what they call in the grip, which means when we're feeling anxious or when we're feeling threatened. It's also about really being compassionate leaders and looking at how we allow the people that we are looking after, our teams and the wider organisation, are we allowing them to really build resilience by having periods of restoration and allowing them to take off their armour, if you like? And when I say take off your armour, what I mean is, are they allowed to be themselves? Are they allowed to be vulnerable? Are they allowed to feel psychologically safe so they can really say how they're feeling? And then as leaders as well, we need to promote habits for well-being. And part of that is, providing opportunities for our workforce to do that and for the people that we look after, but also being good role models in that as well. And then and finally, I just wanted to say a bit about self-care and how we can support people to look after themselves. And that might be, you know, signposting to employee assistance programs, but it also might be that we encourage people to use one of the many apps out there that help self-care, help monitor our self-care, whether that's sleep, whether that's food, exercise, alcohol intake. There's a lot of apps and online resources out there that can support our staff through this time. So just wanted to start really with, you know, acknowledging the situation that everybody finds themselves in, and that's from, I mean, as you know, COVID is personal, so it touches every single person in the system, in the health and care system, and in your organization, from board to floor. Everybody is impacted in some way. It's had an impact on our own families. Many of us have children whose exams might have been cancelled, who have been sent back from university. We have relatives that we can't see face to face, but that we are worried about, perhaps. Our holiday plans have all gone. Any plans that we might have been thinking about in terms of even, you know, moving house or doing things that we really want to do, that's all been put on hold. So there's a real sense of loss and grief right now, which brings an anxiety as well. And there's also a big impact on our workplaces. Many of us have been sent home to work, so we are suddenly working at home. We're balancing homeschooling with achieving our objectives, feeling guilty about whether we're being productive enough, feeling bad about not being able to connect with our workmates. And there's also a real loss of separation of our work life and our home life, because it's become one and the same. So we have to be very conscious and intentional about how we work at home and where we work at home, so that we can begin to separate that out, because we don't have that clear distinction. And many of us enjoy going to work into a separate place, because it gives us that clear separation, but it also gives us that connectivity and that socialization that work life brings us. I also hear in the system that people are talking about a lot of guilt, and that might be guilt because they're not working on the front line. A lot of our elective services have been stood down, so I've heard medics, nurses, radiographers saying that, you know, part of the anxiety and guilt that they're feeling is when they see colleagues who are working in the COVID wards are on critical care, that they feel a bit helpless. They feel like they want to help, but that they, and they also feel guilty for their workmates that are going in there and perhaps, you know, putting themselves in danger with working with patients and working on this this disease that we're all facing right now. So there's a lot of guilt and anxiety, not just with the clinicians, but also with our amazing healthcare managers as well. And so when we are feeling in the impact of fear or the impact of stress in our work lives, it can go either way, really. Some people really step up and are activated by stress and go into real control mode and take control and will almost thrive in that environment, if you like. And we absolutely need managers that can do that, who can take control and who can step into that fear, if you like. On the other hand, we also have managers who feel it is that fear and that stress is a very oppressive thing. It can really weigh heavily on them, and it can really send them into a place where they're struggling. So it's really important not just to support or listen out for the noise, so where the noise is, where the action's happening, but also reaching out into the silence where we're not hearing things. And often if we're not hearing noise or we're not hearing from people, that's probably a little red flag that we need to reach out and see if they're okay and see if we can support them in some way. And in our, when we're in fear, when we're working in fear and feeling anxious, we go into a pre-programmed response, which we have no control over, because our sympathetic nervous system takes over. We get this hormonal deluge that includes adrenaline and cortisol, and we enter states of hyperarousal. We might have sweaty palms. We might have a dry mouth. We might be feeling like we're kind of eating, feast or famine. You know, we're either like not hungry or we just suddenly want to eat everything that's in sight. So and that's quite normal. So our stress response puts us into those situations, or unconsciously we enter into those situations. And if that's okay, and that can be helpful and that can be useful, but when it goes on for a prolonged period of time without any rest periods in between, then we need to be worried about how we're going to stay resilient, how we're going to be in this for the long term, because that living with that kind of, in that frame or in that state can be very exhausting over time and can lead to burnout. So it's really important to make sure that we are getting some downtime in between those times of high stress and times of high activity. So when we are thinking about stress, and at work, then there are times where some of us really thrive in this situation and some people are just really trying to survive. So it's about supporting people who are thriving and making sure that they are taking breaks, that they are restoring in between the periods of activity so that they can be resilient moving forward. And it's also reaching out to those people who have gone quiet and thinking, what support do you need to really get through this? Because there will be different needs for different people. So the biggest thing that you can do as a leader to understand the impact of stress on yourself is to do the work on yourself as a leader and really examine yourself and your behaviours. And many of you will be doing this already through whether you have a coach or whether you've done some activities like Myers-Briggs or whether you've done some of the programs, the leadership programs. So there's something about that we really can't escape the need that we all have to work on ourselves as leaders and bring an awareness or open up that Johari window, if that blind spot about what is it that I need to develop as a leader, what is it that I know about myself as a leader, and are those behaviours really serving us well? So how do you typically respond under stress? That's really the question that you should be asking yourself. And if you've done Myers-Briggs, you might think, well, you know, as using my Myers-Briggs type, I can really kind of begin to understand what I'm like in the grip. So for example, if your Myers-Briggs type is a J, which means that you like to close things off and you like to finish tasks or be very planned, then under stress, what you might find is that you're closing things off too early, that you're perhaps not taking everything in consideration, or that you're closing off ideas to different plans, if you like. So just be aware of that, and you might be missing something. On the other hand, if you're a P, it might be that you're leaving things open too much and become quite trapped in being able to make a decision and closing things off. So just being aware about some of that. That's just one example of how you might look at yourself as a leader. It's useful to think about what are your default behaviours. So under stress, how do you typically respond? And then also thinking about what the impact of those behaviours are. And that's because impact trumps intent every time. And what I mean by that is, you may not intend to be brash, you may not intend to be curt, you may not intend to have upset that person when you spoke in a certain way, or where your behaviour might have upset someone. But the impact of that can be very real and very damaging for the people that are at the end of that behaviour. So impact trumps intent every time. So it's not okay to say, well, my intent was to do this. If the impact was that you upset people, you left a trail of broken relationships on the way, then it's really not okay. It's really not okay. So just hold on to that. Impact trumps intent every time. The other thing is to think, really reflecting on your values as a person, because under stress and our behaviours, can lead us to stray from our values. So the things that we really believe in, fairness, equity, kindness, sometimes that can stray from what is happening during times of stress. So check in with yourself every now and again. Are you staying true to your values in times of stress? And just bringing that awareness to yourself immediately triggers you to think about how you can change that. So reflection is a great thing. And if you do feel like you're straying from your values, there's a really great exercise. One thing that happens when we're in the grip of fear is that we can be preoccupied by thoughts, and it can be very distracting. I know that when COVID first came out, our immediate thoughts were about family, how we're going to cope at home, what we're going to do, what does this new world look like, and we can have a number of thoughts that aren't very helpful. So it's really helpful to think about what your thoughts are telling you when you're in the grip of fear, and are they being useful. So if we think about where our thoughts think, we have a core set of beliefs that we have developed over time as children that we take into adulthood. And sometimes those beliefs are helpful, and sometimes those beliefs are not serving you well anymore. So, for example, you might believe, or one of my beliefs that I've had to challenge is, you know, that I'm not any good at maths. And that's just something that I believed through school, but it might have been, and as a child, I'm thinking that is just the core of who I am. I'm not good at maths. But it might have been that I didn't have a good teacher. It might have been that I wasn't ready to learn that maths. There could have been a number of issues around there. So that belief I hold drives a thought that I'm not good at maths. So then when I'm presented with some work spreadsheets, my feeling is, oh my God, I'm not good at this, I can't do this. And then that drives the behaviour for me to avoid, if you like. So what that means is I really need to challenge that. And I can do maths, I can work with spreadsheets. So when I kind of switch that thought, the actual feelings change and the behaviours change. So that's an example of how a belief can drive a behaviour. So what I would like you to think about doing is a quick activity, which is doing a thought download. So when you're feeling like you've got a lot of thoughts in your head that aren't helpful or confusing, get a piece of paper and in an unfiltered way, just write everything down on the paper. Don't try to make sense or analyse it. Just see what comes out. Even the most ridiculous thoughts that you're having, because they do tell a story when you start to analyse it. And then once you have it all down in black and white, take a look at what you've written and just take some time to examine each of the thoughts and ask yourself, for each of those thoughts, what is the belief that is driving this thought? What am I holding? What are the value of the beliefs that I'm holding that is driving that thought? Is it serving me well? Is this belief that I'm holding and that thought that it's causing serving me well? And if it's not, then, take some time, give it a name and then let it go. And then think about what proportion of influence are the beliefs and thoughts having on how you're feeling right now. So just do some of those reflections, take some time to examine the thought, ask yourself what's driving it, reflect on what beliefs you might be holding, and then really importantly, ask yourself, is it serving me well? And if it's not, let it go. Because if you can change your thoughts, you'll change your feelings, and your feelings will drive your behaviours. So it's a really great activity to do. Do it when you've got some time, when you're undisturbed, and really, give yourself, and it's a self-coaching method, so give yourself some time to do some self-coaching by doing a thought download. Really, really useful activity. The other activity that you can do is thinking about another great coaching tool is called the ladder of inference. And basically that's a tool that can help you understand how you're making decisions or what your decisions are based on. And again, it goes back to your beliefs and your and the thoughts that you're having. So the ladder of inference, excuse me, easy for me to say, is really a way of taking you back to the basics. So on the bottom level of the ladder of inference is, facts and data. So where we start with is, what do we observe? What are we seeing? What are the facts? What can I find that is objective, that can help me with my decision? And then once you've got the facts, we start to apply, we start to interpret those facts. And sometimes, we definitely do this, we apply assumptions that we have that we know based on the contextual circumstances we're in. So we get the facts, we make an interpretation, we apply assumptions based on the system we're working in, and then we start overlaying it with beliefs that we have. So as you keep going up the ladder, you find that you get the data, you add assumptions, you add meanings to that, and then you might take actions. And that's what we call the ladder of inference. Now, under stress, what can happen is that we can run up the ladder of inference very quickly, and we might jump straight to basing decisions on assumptions, or we might start basing decisions on our beliefs. And what the ladder of inference does is a really helpful reminder of, let's go back down that ladder, let's start with what we can see, what are the facts, what's the data we have, and then build up your decision making on that. Because in the grip, we can sometimes make decisions that aren't based on the correct information, or we may, our assumptions or our beliefs, because we are in fear, it's a natural response, we kind of go to an automatic decision based on assumptions and beliefs. So take some time just to think about the ladder of inference and think, go down to the bottom rung. What do I observe? What is the data telling me? And what can we interpret from that? And then you can go and add on assumptions and beliefs to that. So ladder of inference, look it up. I'll put it on the website, but it's a really useful tool in terms of making decisions whilst in the grip. So I just wanted to finally leave you with a thought, really, that these are really difficult times. It's really important to be kind to yourself and be kind to others. Forgive yourself for some of the things that we're doing that we may not be hugely proud of, but everybody's human and we all make mistakes. So we are all in this together, and the good news is that when we face a common enemy, we're more likely to pull together for the benefit of everyone. And we can see that across our whole system. Everybody has a shared aim, a shared goal, and that is to keep everybody well, to keep everybody safe, and to minimise the deaths from this terrible disease. So everybody's in this together. Look for the heroes. There are heroes everywhere. Everybody, there's heroes in our health and care workforce, in our public services, in the supermarkets, in the delivery men. There are people who are out there who are helping us live lives as best we can through this terrible time. So look for the heroes and let's celebrate the heroes. Stay calm and focused. There's some really great learning to be had from meditation, really separating out your thoughts from your mind, giving your mind a rest. There's a fantastic website, which is www.greatergood.berkeley.edu, and that's all about the science of happiness, the science of mindfulness, and there's some great COVID articles in there just now to help us keep well and keep our mental health well through this time. Show gratitude, and that can be really simple. That can be at the start of meetings or handovers, just a simple, what are we proud of last week or yesterday? What are we proud of today? And you can also end meetings with that, with, you know, what did we do today that we're really proud of? So gratitude, practicing gratitude is a really helpful thing for restoring wellness and mind and being happy. They say that gratitude is the antidote to anxiety. So where we're feeling anxious, if we can show some gratitude or keep a gratitude diary, that's really simple, right? Three things that you're grateful for every day, just on a little booklet by your bed at the end of the night. And that can just finish off your day on a really positive note. And put your mind, again, switch your mind to thinking away from anxiety to something that is good and that you're grateful for. And finally, be compassionate. We need compassionate leaders at this time more than ever. Everybody's worried, everybody's anxious. So as a leader, we need to role model that being compassionate. Keep your words positive, because your words become your behaviour. And that was the words of Gandhi. Okay, I'm going to leave it there. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. And do look at our website, www.innovationnwc.nhs.uk, and search for the Coaching Academy. And we will put some coaching tools up there that will help you with some of the activities that I've talked about in the podcast. Okay, thank you. Keep well, keep safe. And hopefully I will speak to you soon.